This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. A cinematic impeachment, a messy appointment, a couple of confirmations, a quick party line vote on the stimulus package. It's Wednesday, and time once again for a visit with the political junkie.
There you go again.
When I hear your new ideas, I'm reminded of that ad. Where's the beef?
Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice.
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
Lipstick.
But I'm the decider.
On Wednesdays, NPR political editor Ken Rudin joins us to talk politics amid the grief over Senate appointments in New York and Illinois. Senator Russ Feingold joins us in a few minutes to propose a constitutional amendment. Of course, his state tried to choose a senator the old-fashioned way, and there's still no winner in Minnesota. Tim Geithner joins us wins his confirmation. Looks like Eric Holders is on the way, and it looks like politics as usual. On the stimulus bill, we begin first, as always, with a trivia question. Political junkie Ken Rudin is here with us in Studio 3A. Hey, Ken.
Hi, Neil.
And what's the trivia question?
Well, two things that I never thought would happen in my lifetime, the election of an African-American president and the Arizona Cardinals going to the Super Bowl, and both are happening within 2 weeks of each other, pretty remarkable. Okay, Super Bowl is Sunday. Who was the last player to play on a Super Bowl and later run for Congress?
If you think you know the identity of the last Super Bowl participant to run for Congress, give us a phone call, 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website, npr.org. Just click on Talk of the Nation. So, Ken, Illinois gets more and more bizarre.
How come? In what way? We keep saying this every week. You can't make this stuff up, and you can't make this stuff up. But while the Illinois State Senate, 49 members of it, 59 members of it, are trying to decide not if to convict Rod Blagojevich, but when and by what number, the governor himself is doing his magical mystery tour of all the TV shows trying to proclaim his innocence.
And getting some of the real tough questions, like here on The View.
He does a fabulous Nixon impression. Do it for us.
Who said that?
Somebody told me. Come on.
Well,
I am not a crook. Do it.
The governor refusing to be drawn on that. He complained continually on these television shows that, his comments were being taken out of context.
You can take all kinds of things out of context, make them sound a certain way.
Again, there's full context to all of those conversations, but you can interpret it one way. They took snippets of conversations completely out of context, did not provide all of the tapes that tell the whole story.
Snippets all out of context, Ken Rudin. And in the meantime, they're proceeding with this. There's no lawyers there representing Rod Blagojevich. He's not there. They could vote on this as soon as today.
Well, actually, comparing himself to Richard Nixon, Nixon's campaign slogan in 1972 was four more years, I think it looks like four more days for Rod Blagojevich. I'm hearing that the first of all, you need two-thirds of a vote in the Senate, so you need 40 of the 59 state senators to convict him. The impeachment vote was 117-1, so I suspect you can get 40, and he could be gone as early as Thursday. So Rod Blagojevich may be former governor by Thursday.
And, of course, that case could then end up in court, which is, of course, where the Minnesota Senate race is still ensconced.
Right. Going one more thing about Blagojevich, he has still yet to be indicted on anything, but they expect an indictment to come as late as April, so he'll be a former governor when he goes to trial on this. Remember, impeachment often is a political trial and not a legal trial.
Well, one question, and before we get on to Minnesota and then on to New York, and that is, can he then appeal his conviction on an impeachment case to the Illinois State Supreme Court?
Well, see, I don't believe he can, because I'm thinking of the Meekum stuff in Arizona. Once he was convicted by the Arizona State Senate, he was gone from governor. So I suspect that will decide his fate. To Minnesota, it's the same thing. Nothing has changed. Al Franken still has his 225-vote lead. Norm Coleman, the case is still before the Minnesota Supreme Court. Three judges are looking at it. He still says, Coleman still says, that there are 12,000 absentee ballots that have been improperly rejected. from the count. It was a 2.9 million vote hand count. And Coleman says that it's just too soon to declare anybody the winner. And, of course, the governor, the Republican governor, and the Democratic Secretary of State of Minnesota, for that reason, have refused to certify a winner, letting this go out in court. But we may not have an answer until March.
All right. And finally, there is a selection finally made in the state of New York. Of course, Hillary Rodham Clinton, the junior senator from New York, is now confirmed as Secretary of State. And here's the Governor Patterson announcing his selection.
So with all of that work, she is dynamic, she is articulate, she is perceptive, she is courageous, she is outspoken. I am appointing her to the United States Senate representing New York today. Please welcome our next senator and current Congresswoman Kirsten Gillibrand.
Kirsten Gillibrand. Who could have possibly picked Kirsten Gillibrand?
Well, I confess I have been saying that from the beginning. But the amazing thing is, as weird as the Illinois situation has been, New York is even worse. The fact is that this was going on for far longer than it should have. David Patterson lost a lot of allies, a lot of goodwill. Of course, he was the accidental governor, becoming governor when Elliot Spitzer was embroiled in a prostitution ring scandal last year. And basically, Caroline Kennedy, who was an iconic figure throughout her life, or at least our whole lives, and yet she came out pretty tarnished in this whole thing. And I suspect that a lot of it had to do with the way that Patterson dealt with it. He liked her, that he didn't like her. He supported her, but he didn't support her. He kept giving different kind of signals. And then ultimately, it looked like that there was some stuff about Caroline Kennedy that was coming out, that she was either a tax fraud or she had troubles with a nanny or she had problems with her marriage. And it was all innuendo coming out of the governor's office. So a lot of people are saying that he just was so disingenuous, if not dishonest, in the way he treated these candidates, especially Caroline Kennedy. He's going to have a tough time in 2010, assuming he runs for governor. Andrew Cuomo, the state attorney general, who was on the list of a possible senator, is hinting or has been hinted as a possible primary challenger. And Gillibrand, who has 100% NRA voting record, has now been challenged, suspected to be challenged by perhaps Carolyn McCarthy, who lost her husband to this terrible Long Island Railroad massacre. In 1993. So the Democratic Party, it looks kind of messy in the state of New York, and all because of this opportunity to appoint a U.S. senator.
Well, let's see if we get some people in on our trivia question, and that was, if we can remind you, who was the last player in the Super Bowl to run for Congress? And let's start with Mike, and Mike's with us from Oklahoma City.
Yes.
Go ahead, Mike.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
It's Steve Largent.
Steve Largent elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame, but Ken?
Well, never played the Super Bowl. I mean, he did run for Congress. He was elected in Oklahoma, ran for governor, was defeated, but he never played in the Super Bowl.
Nice try, Mike.
All right.
Thanks very much. Let's go now to Ed. Ed with us from Greensboro, North Carolina.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good.
Good. Was it Heath Shuler?
Heath Shuler of flop as a quarterback for the Washington Redskins and elected to Congress from the state of North Carolina.
He's a member of Congress from North Carolina, but never played in the Super Bowl, like as with Steve Largent.
All righty. Thank you.
Ed, thanks very much. Let's see if we can go to Chris. And Chris is with us from the Hardware City, New Britain, Connecticut.
Yes, this is Chris from New Britain and the New Britain Herald. And I believe that it was Lynn Swann.
Lynn Swann of the Pittsburgh Steelers, of course, did play in the Super Bowl, but
she was great.
She was really good and a member of the Hall of Fame.
But although he did run for governor in Pennsylvania against Ed Rendell, never was elected to Congress.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry, never ran for Congress.
Congress.
Never ran for Congress.
All right. Thanks very much. Let's see if we can go now to, this is Joseph. Joseph with us from Grand Junction, Colorado.
I was going to say J.C. Watts.
J.C. Watts was a quarterback from Oklahoma, did run for and elected to Congress. But Ken?
I don't believe he ever played professional football, let alone play in the Super Bowl.
I think he's right on both those counts.
These are all great players, but not the answer we're looking for.
Thank you.
Thanks, Joseph. Let's see if we can go now to Andrew. Andrew with us, another caller from Greensboro, North Carolina.
Yeah, Trent Dilfer.
Trent Dilfer played in the Super Bowl, which he won, I think, for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But I don't believe,
Congress?
Ken.
I don't believe he
I think he ran for commentator on ESPN.
Trent Dilfer, I don't remember. There was a Trent Lott, I think.
Different fella. Anyway, thanks very much. And let's see if we go to Bill. Bill with us from Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Okay, I'm going to guess it might have been Jack Kemp.
Jack Kemp, the great quarterback for the Buffalo Bills, always handing off to Cookie Gilchrist. And yes, he did run for not only Congress and was elected and later for Vice President of the United States, but Ken?
Never played in the Super Bowl. Matter of fact, I don't think there was a Super Bowl when he played, but he never played in it. I guess he played for the Chargers and the Bills, neither of which went to the Super Bowl when he played football.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks for the call, Bill. And let's see if we can go now to Mark, and Mark's calling us from Baltimore.
Yeah, I'm going to guess it was Phil McConkey, played for the Giants.
Ken?
That is the correct answer.
Ding, 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 ding. Mark, you win the no prize this week.
Phil McConkey ran in 1990 in the primary in New Jersey's 12th congressional district, lost to Dick Zimmer,
won the Super Bowl, but lost the congressional race.
So he's two for two.
Mark, thanks very much. You're the winner of this week's no prize.
Okay. Thanks.
All right. Thanks very much.
Neil, one of these days there has to be a prize for the
there
no
has to be a prize for there. It's got to be a prize for the no prize. You got to get something for the no prize. In the meantime, cabinet positions. Eric Holder's nomination to be Attorney General approved today in committee. Tim Geithner, did not get overwhelming support, but he is now the Treasury of the Secretary.
Yes.
Secretary of the Treasury.
Or either one. But the vote was 60 to 34. And again, that was a lot of people, mostly Republicans, but a lot of folks who voted against him because they just were not satisfied with his answers or lack of answers why he failed to pay taxes or at least belatedly pay taxes when he worked for the International Monetary Fund. And while they were mostly Republicans who voted against him, Tom Harkin of Iowa, Russ Feingold of Wisconsin, Robert Byrd of West Virginia, and independent Bernie Sanders of Vermont all voted against him. So it wasn't just it wasn't just a partisan thing. The Democrats, too, had some questions about Geithner's insufficient answers, shall we say.
And where do we stand now on the remaining cabinet members?
Well, let's see. They're still going to have first of all, regarding Eric Holder, the vote
was got to go before the whole Senate.
17 to 2 was the vote today in the Judiciary
Committee.
That's
rich, they said.
Huh?
That's rich, they said.
That's exactly right. And the two, it was Tom Coburn and John Cornyn, the two Republicans who voted against him. Leon Panetta as CIA still has to come up. And we still don't have a Commerce Secretary since Bill Richardson withdrew his name in January. What I'm hearing is a guy named John Thompson, who's the CEO of a company, a Silicon Valley company called Semantic. I don't mean to be anti-Semantic, Neil is shaking his head. But he may be the next Secretary of Commerce.
And don't we still have Dennis Blair to be Director of the Central Intelligence
Agency? That's right, and he's in as well.
All right, coming up after Blago and Burris, Patterson and Gillibrand, and all the brouhahas along the way, do we need a constitutional amendment to require that vacant Senate seats be filled by special election rather than gubernatorial appointment? Senator Russ Feingold will join us to talk about that when we come back. Stay with us. It's The Political Junkie. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. It's Wednesday, which means political junkie Ken Rudin is with us, and the post-election brawls over Senate appointments might begin to die down despite the Blago media blitz, but some people are brainstorming solutions to prevent future drama. Democratic Senator Russ Feingold plans to introduce a constitutional amendment to require that vacant Senate seats be filled by special election rather than appointment. He'll join us in just a bit, but we also want to hear from you. Do you think we need to rewrite the Constitution to end gubernatorial appointments? You can join us on that, or if you have any other questions on the political news of the week, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. Go to npr.org and click on Talk of the Nation. Meanwhile, while we await Senator Feingold, there's a couple of other political developments we can talk about, Ken, including the fact that, people in Virginia this year were barraged by political ads, unusual in a presidential election year that the state of Virginia was a battleground. In fact, it became a blue state for the first time, but so people pretty tired of political advertising. Nevertheless, they're starting to hear more political advertising. This is an ad for one of the candidates in the Democratic primary for the gubernatorial seat in Virginia.
Make our ports more competitive. Invest in renewable energy to create jobs. Keep our carriers here in Virginia where they belong. I'm Terry McAuliffe. These are just some of the ideas I've heard from you in Hampton Roads. It goes to show the best ideas don't always come out of Richmond. I've spent four decades building businesses and creating jobs. Now I'm running for governor because I know we can create thousands more right here. I'll make it my job to protect your job and get Virginia's economy moving.
So what do you think is his issue going to be, Ken?
Jobs in the economy?
Could be.
You know something? He sounds very much like Mark Warner, another business entrepreneur who was elected governor, I guess, 8 years ago and was very, very successful. Terry McAuliffe is not known as a Virginia party person, but certainly a fundraiser who did very well when he was a Democratic National Chairman under the Clinton administration. And, of course, Terry McAuliffe is perhaps best known for the fact how much money he can raise. There still is a primary. There are two other Democrats challenging him. The primary is in early June. But right now, you know, it looks very good for McAuliffe, who has so much money. Of course, when you mentioned that the first time the state went blue, of course, the first time since 64.
64, yeah, right. First time in most of our listeners. His right, lifetimes, right. Anyway, and you might wonder, governors in the state of Virginia are term limited. So Tim Kaine, the incumbent, and in fact the new Democratic National Committee chair, he cannot run for reelection.
Right, and also if you go back to Lyndon Johnson, I think for the last 40 years or so, every time there's a Republican in the White House, Virginia elects a Democrat governor. Every time there's a Democrat in the White House, Virginia elects a Republican governor. So that could be good news for the Republican Party this year.
And you mentioned a couple of other Democrats running against Terry McAuliffe, but who might be up on the Republican side?
It would be the State Attorney General Bob McDonnell, who is unopposed for the nomination.
All right. Speaking of the Republican National Committee chair, there still isn't one. There's supposed to be an election, I think, next week.
There is on Friday, actually. This Friday, the RNC meets today, starts meeting today for 3-4 days. There is still a chairman. It's Mike Duncan, who was appointed in 2007 by President Bush, and that's his problem because he was appointed by President Bush, and I suspect that many Republicans, if not most Republicans, would like to turn the page, go on to a new page. So there are 6 candidates running for the nomination for the chairmanship of the RNC, including Mike in addition to Mike Duncan, it's Michael Steele, who's the former Lieutenant Governor of Maryland, who's African-American, another African-American candidate is Kenneth Blackwell, the former Ohio Secretary of State. Katen Dawson, my personal prediction, who is the chairman of the South Carolina Republican Party. Saul Anuzis, who is the Michigan chair. And Chip Salzman, who was Mike Huckabee's campaign manager last year.
And who gets to vote in this important election?
RNC members. And you need 85 votes, which is 50% of the RNC, and they're meeting in Washington, and the election is Friday. Now, I'm not saying that this is very, very important, but I guess with the fact that the Republican Party is out of power, there's really no national Republican leader. I don't know if the RNC chair would be a national leader, but he could certainly set the tone for what happens for the party.
And joining us now is Senator Russ Feingold, a Democrat. And Senator Feingold, nice to have you with us today.
Good to be on the show. Thank you.
And you believe, just to reset for those who are just joining us, you believe that we need, after the debacles in New York and Illinois, that we need a constitutional amendment to mandate that vacant Senate seats be filled by special election.
That's right. I mean, this isn't something that's completely new. We had a constitutional amendment, 17th Amendment, back in 1913 that established the principle for the first time in this country that a senator should be directly elected by the people, not by state legislatures. The only reason it doesn't happen sometimes is these vacancy situations. All House members are always elected by special elections. It's always been required by the Constitution. So you just have this one loophole, this one area where, unfortunately, in 4 cases here, the people of the state didn't decide who a senator should be. It was decided just by one person, by a governor.
After
a couple of cases, wasn't very pretty.
Indeed, and it's not very pretty right now in Springfield, and don't you think that's going to convince a lot of states to say, hey, wait a minute, let's do this ourselves?
I would think so. I mean, I understand the governors who have the power right now might not like it. Of course, the odds of having a Senate vacancy in your state are very small. It's a rare occurrence. I would think the legislatures would be open to the idea of finishing the job and having the people of their state make this decision. We've had it this way in Wisconsin forever, one of the few states that never had the appointment. And so it's worked just fine. All our House races, of course, are by special election. And when Joe McCarthy, the infamous senator, died, a guy named Bill Proxmire was elected to replace him, became one of the best senators in the United States Senate, and served for 30 years. So it's a system that can work and has worked in Wisconsin, and I think would be a big improvement over the circus that we've been watching.
Nevertheless, the Constitution is not something you rewrite lightly. Given that example and given the fact that many states do have, like Wisconsin, the special election, why should we tinker with the Constitution?
Well, only 3 or 4 states have this Wisconsin system. Very few have it. And what you see here is a real significant example of how the Senate can be distorted from a place that involves people being elected to people that were appointed in the first place. It gets to be excessive. So the Constitution has already been amended in this general area. This is just basically tidying up in the 17th Amendment. It would be a separate amendment, but that would be the effect. It is not changing, obviously, the structure of the Constitution in any significant way.
Ken?
Senator, one of the arguments against this proposal is that it would cost upwards of tens of millions of dollars to run a special election.
Well, that's kind of a bizarre argument. We have elections, special elections for the House. We have elections for in the fall for all the House and Senate races, governors. Why should people be suddenly concerned about the cost of an election? Why wouldn't the people of a state want to be able to have a direct say in who's going to be their senator for the next 6 or 20 or 40 years? To me, it's money well spent to have a democracy and to have a democratic outcome. I think the cost argument is, frankly, a joke.
Well, you do have an election in November, but let's just say with Barack Obama leaving the Senate, you'd have a vacancy for up to 10 months then without a senator.
No, they can call a special election under this.
So any time it could be held.
They have their own rules. In Wisconsin, we've had rules for years that make sense in this regard. And there's a time frame after the vacancy. There's a certification, and then there's a period for nomination papers for a primary and a final. And if it turns out, as it often does, that kind of works with an already scheduled election. For example, in Wisconsin, we have a February primary, an April primary, a September primary, and a November primary. So actually, you don't have to have usually, in most of these cases, a separate date. You can usually tie it in with one of those, and that's the way it's generally worked in Wisconsin.
Hugh has a question on this point. He's calling from Oakland.
Yeah, in California, whenever there have been special elections, they've been the least well attended. So ironically, wouldn't a special election be not very democratic?
And you're right. It's less democratic than a general election, but it sure as heck is a lot more democratic than just one guy making the decision. That's the governor, so clearly it's not perfect, but it's enormously better than having just one person having backroom conversations, making a decision that cuts out the option of people to vote. At least with a special election, everybody has the option to vote and participate in the decision, and they cannot with gubernatorial appointment.
And my second question is, how often has this situation presented itself in the past that we would have a constitutional amendment over?
Well, there have been 184 senators appointed to the United States Senate since the 17th Amendment was enacted. And, of course, there have been quite a few lately. So, no, it doesn't happen a lot, but sometimes it can determine who's going to be the senator from a place for decades. And so it's a big deal, and I think people of a state only get two senators. They really ought to have a direct say in who that senator and who those senators are going to be.
Hugh, thanks very much for the call. And Senator Feingold, we know you have to run off to a committee meeting, but I did want to ask you, how much support do you think you're going to have in the United States Senate?
It's good already. Senator Begich, new senator from Alaska, called me up right away, said he wanted to be part of it. Senator John McCain's already signed on to it. I had some good conversations in Judiciary Committee this morning with other senators who, of course, are the ones that will have the first vote on it. It has to go through the Senate Judiciary Committee. So, you know, we're starting to build support, and I'm enjoying it.
And you mentioned Senator Begich in Alaska. Of course, Alaska is one of those controversial appointments, too, when the governor, Frank Murkowski, appointed his own daughter to the Senate.
Well, that's interesting, and that's why Begich is on board, because he said after that happened, Alaska changed its law. They had a statewide initiative where they made the decision, like Wisconsin did, to have a system where they have special elections. So Alaska is the latest state to join this group. Massachusetts did it a few years ago, too, in 2004. But the states that have always had, for the longest time, direct elections for Senate are Oregon and Wisconsin.
And all that would solve is everything but Minnesota.
Yeah, well, Minnesota, I don't think they have this.
I don't think so. Senator Feingold, we thank you for your time. We know you've got to run. Appreciate it. Russell Feingold, Democrat of Wisconsin, on the line with us from his office on Capitol Hill. And, well, we still have a couple of calls on this point, but why don't we take one? This from Paul. Paul with us from Reno in Nevada.
Yes, sir. How y'all doing today?
All right. Pretty good.
Well, to disagree with the senator, I think, number one, that we should especially be considering the extra cost right now with the state governments, all of them pretty much being running budget deficits right now. I don't think that they needed an unneeded mandate from Washington. Number two, we're talking about a seat that's usually only held for a short time, unless in an unusual case the recipient of the Senate seat proves to be a good senator, and then it might go on, but the people will get a chance to elect them then. And third, I'm from Georgia, and we when we lost Senator
Paul Coverdell.
I forgot his name already.
Paul Coverdell.
Yeah. Right. Governor Barnes appointed former Governor Zell Miller, and most of the conservatives are pretty upset about that. But Zell Miller turned out to be one of the conservatives' best friends in the Senate. So oftentimes we would want a special election because we don't want a governor to appoint someone, but it turns out he appoints the right person for the job anyway. So I think it's a wonderful idea to be, quote-unquote, a democracy, but we are a republic, and I think that we should let the states decide instead of just another federal mandate.
And it can run about $500,000, $1 million to hold a special election.
That's true, but Paul makes a good point, because if you don't like the person the governor's appointed, you could either defeat him or her in the next primary election or the next general election. My column, my Political Junkie blog today... Yeah, I write a blog, yes, it's very famous. But it goes state by state, including the Coverdell-Zell Miller thing, every state, and the last time it appointed a senator, what happened to those appointees.
Paul, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Our guest, of course, every Wednesday is our NPR's political editor and our political junkie. Ken Rudin is with us here in Studio 3A. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Ken, this week it was President Obama going up to Capitol Hill to say, let's put politics past us and go work on this stimulus bill on a bipartisan manner. And this is the reaction from Mike Pence, one of the leaders in the Republican Party in the House of Representatives.
But as grateful as we are for the president's spirit, as I told him personally, House Democrats have completely ignored the president's call for bipartisan cooperation.
And Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, of course, a Democrat, responded by saying, the Republicans get to say some things, but they don't get to say a lot.
So bipartisanship means giving them an opportunity to make their voices heard and maybe to persuade and prevail in the marketplace of ideas. It does not mean that we are going to have a continuation of the last 8 years of failed economic policies that have taken us where we are today.
Glad there's a new tone in Washington.
I'm not convinced that what Barack Obama is doing is necessarily looking for Republican votes, but I think he wants to point out a difference between himself and his predecessor, because George W. Bush really did not reach out to Democrats for much of his tenure in the White House. And I think Obama wanted to do that bipartisan, at least reaching out, even if Republicans, you may have 10 Republicans who vote for it. The vote in the House today is between 6 and 7 o'clock Eastern Time. And so you may not get many Republicans at all, but I think Obama wanted to set the tone that at least he wants to listen, making the point that his predecessor did not want to do that, and perhaps trying to build some goodwill when he'll really need those Republican votes.
And he is inviting also, I think, 6 members from each party in the House of Representatives and 5 members of each party from the United States Senate over to the White House this evening for drinks and further talks about bipartisan issues. I suspect that's going to be after the House passes his stimulus package pretty much on a party line vote. Let's see if we get one last caller in. This is Leslie. Leslie with us from Ann Arbor in Michigan.
Hi. I just wanted to say that, first of all, I love your show.
Oh, thank you.
But I wanted to say that I disagree with Russ Feingold for the first time probably ever. I think that Blagojevich has offered us a rare amount of comic relief in this otherwise rather dreary time following in the following George Bush. I mean, very worried about the death of irony and comedy and all of that, and now... When you hear Blagojevich talking about calling the ghost of Martin Luther King and Gandhi and comparing himself to them, I just think that comic relief is priceless, and I would love to see other crazy politicians like him out more often.
Generally, you like crazy politicians in somebody else's state.
Yes, absolutely. They better not come to Michigan, that's all I can say.
Ken?
But it's not just Blagojevich, and I think part of the reason that this may have more support is because David Paterson, by most accounts, botched the whole process in New York. And what happened in Delaware is interesting, too. They picked somebody, when Joe Biden became vice president, they picked his top aide, and this aide said he was going to retire in 2010, conveniently when Joe Biden's son, Bo
exactly.
Biden, returned. So there's not only just Blagojevich, there seems to be 3 of the 4 Senate appointees, excluding the one in Colorado, which seemed to have gone well, but 3 of them are pretty controversial.
Right, but the comic relief is what I'm after. I just miss it so much now that Bush is gone, and I think Blagojevich offers us that.
Leslie,
and it looks like for months to come.
Leslie, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it. Bye-bye. And we should mention, of course, that fourth appointee to the Senate this time around was Michael Bennett in Colorado.
Right, who's you know, a completely unexpected choice, but didn't have the controversy that the other three choices did.
And the reason this is controversial, yes, you can be defeated in the next primary or the next general election, but the fact of the matter is you have an enormous leg up in the next primary and the next general election. You can start fundraising now, and you have all that name recognition.
That's true, but of the last, if you look at the states who have had this in the last couple of years, there's just as many people who've been defeated as the one who've been reelected. So it cuts both ways.
Ken Rudin, as always, thanks very much.
Thanks, Neil.
Ken Rudin, our political junkie. You can read his blog at npr.org. Join us every Wednesday here on Talk of the Nation. Coming up, President Obama chose Arab satellite network Al Arabiya for his first formal interview of his presidency. To mixed reaction, we'll hear two views, and we'd like to hear from you. If you listened to or read the interview, what message did you receive? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.